Welcome to Cryptid Picnic's mini picnic episode,
where one of your co-hosts will share a bite-sized treat with you.
So get cozy
and enjoy. Hello and welcome to our first installment of a mini picnic. My name is Ivy, and today I want to talk about unicorns. More specifically, where the idea of the unicorn may have come from, and how long-distance traders were able to take advantage of some Europeans' belief in unicorns and bamboozle them into buying fake unicorn horns. It was a really big trade. It's really weird history, so get ready. I think most people are familiar with the unicorn. Lovely horse-like animal with a single horn protruding from the head. And unicorns are not only mentioned in many mythologies, but the King James Version of the Bible translates one beast as being a unicorn, and it is also the national animal of Scotland. No, I'm not joking. You can look it up. I love it so much. And up until the 1700s, many rulers across Europe would buy what they believed were unicorn horns, often for the metaphysical properties that they believed unicorn horns possessed. Sometimes the horns were shaved into powder and consumed, often for healing purposes that they thought it contained. Cups and drinking apparatuses were also used, believing that the healing or magical properties would infuse with the liquid you were drinking out of it. And other royal items were crafted out of quote-unquote unicorn horn, but spoiler alert, unicorns are not real. So what were they actually consuming and crafting things out of? Well, more often than not, the main horns used for this unicorn horn scheme was rhino horns or narwhal tusks. A lot of unicorn horn trade and sales during the Middle Ages were actually the horns of rhinos or narwhal, because rhinos, which, fun fact, originated in North America some 50 million years ago but went extinct about 5 million years ago, they were being hunted in countries like Africa, and the horns were then exported elsewhere. Narwhals were also commonly hunted in the waters of northern Europe, and then their tusks, or I'll get into what they actually are soon, but their quote-unquote horns were being sold as unicorn horns to the wealthy and upper class in countries like Scotland and Denmark. Some churches even possessed supposed unicorn horns in their collections as well that were just the tusks of narwhal. Other notable examples include the priceless crown jewels of Austria, which consists of a crown, orb, and scepter, with the scepter itself being made in about 1615, having been crafted from a narwhal tusk and adorned with rubies, sapphires, and pearls. There is also a Danish royal throne that was made in 1671 for the coronation of King Christian V, which is constructed out of both ivory from elephant horns and narwhal tusks. Of course, many believe that these were unicorn horns, again, which added to the rarity, value, and status of said items that only the upper crust of society could afford. There is one other reason I should mention as to why so many royals wanted to keep unicorn horn on hand specifically at the dinner table, i.e. drinkware made out of it, some had dishes made out of it, or they would keep small pieces of it on hand that they would drop into their food and mix it around. And this is because of a very strong fear and paranoia that a lot of royals had that someone was always trying to poison them, because they believed that unicorn horn could somehow metaphysically eliminate poisons, or some believed that the horn could change color if it came in contact with the poison, alerting you to the presence of the poison in your food or drink, and thus saving your life. Of course, this wasn't exactly true, wasn't really how any of this worked, and there are no cases of quote-unquote unicorn horn saving any royalty from being poisoned. And this was a common medieval scam of sorts because people in these countries had never seen an animal like a rhino or a narwhal, and so of course they wouldn't be able to identify what their horns or tusks looked like. And it wasn't until the 18th century, or sometime in the 1700s, that it became better known in the general public that these animals, A, existed, and B, that they were the source of these unicorn horns. But I gave a rhino a fun fact, so I'll dedicate a minute or so to narwhals, because the horn or tusk of a narwhal is actually a tooth. Their only tooth, as a matter of fact, because they just swallow fish whole, they do not chew, and this very long tooth can grow up to 9 feet long. Rarely, however, some male narwhals do grow both and have two long tusks. And although it was believed that their long tusks were also used for fighting, this seems to be untrue because they actually use their tusks to rub on each other to clean each other, because the tusk is actually pretty flexible and it can bend up to a foot in either direction. So also evidence that they weren't used to fight each other. But now I'd like to talk about where the fabled unicorn came from. Why was there such a strong belief in them? The word unicorn can be traced back to around the 13th century from the old French word unicorn, which is spelled with the E at the end, which comes from the late Latin unicornus, which quite literally translates to one horn, with uni meaning one and cornus meaning horn. Depictions of this mythological animal, often resembling a goat or horse with a single horn on the head, appeared in many early Mesopotamian artworks. Mesopotamia being a region of Southwest Asia where some of the world's earliest civilizations developed. But they weren't the only ones with depictions of such an animal. There are other ancient myths from China and India that detail similar animals, as well as descriptions of them which can be seen in Greek literature from the historian Ctesias from around 400 BCE. Here, these unicorns are described as being the size of a horse with a white body, purple head, blue eyes, and a horn which is white at the base, black in the middle, and red at the tip. And drinking from this horn was said to cure you from many things, including poison, stomach problems, and epilepsy. This animal was likely just a rhino, with added elements such as the many colors of the beast having been caused by mistranslations throughout time, or sometimes we have artists who try to illustrate these beasts they are reading about in early bestiaries, and maybe they're not being very accurate with the descriptions they are going off of. One such bestiary, which is a compendium of animals, beasts, and sometimes plants, also comes from Greece. It is known as the Physiologus, which says that unicorns are a strong, fierce animal that can only be caught when a virgin maiden is presented before them. The unicorn will leap onto her lap, she will suckle from the unicorn, and then lead it to the king's palace. Because of writings like this, some medieval writers likened the unicorn to Christ and the virgin in this story to the Virgin Mary. So this, alongside the mention of unicorns in the Bible, made this animal notable among many Christians. But I will add that the better translation for the biblical word that had been translated as a unicorn previously is more accurately translated as being a type of ox. To conclude this mini picnic, it seems that descriptions of foreign beasts may have inspired the vision of the unicorn that we still have today. If you are someone from the Middle Ages and you are familiar with goats or deer or horses or other similar four-legged land animals, and someone describes a rhino to you as a four-legged land animal with a single horn protruding from the face, you might begin to picture a horse-like animal with the one long horn coming out of the forehead, because these are animals that are familiar to you. And it was this lack of knowledge on these other animals, like the rhino or the narwhal, that made it so easy for their horns to be marketed to the wealthy as having belonged to unicorns, with many people having believed in the existence of said animal. Today, we understand that the unicorns, of course, are not real, but their stunning depictions and artwork throughout time keep the fantasy of the unicorn alive. If you are wanting to see some of these examples for yourself, the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York has long been on my bucket list, and it contains some famous tapestries of lovely florals surrounding beautiful white unicorns, such as a tapestry known as the Unicorn in Captivity, which I am dying to see someday. And of course, all of my sources will be linked in the show notes below, and let us know your thoughts on our very first mini picnic, bringing you a fun little bite-sized story. Carla and I would obviously prefer to record every episode together, but seeing as I live in the United States and she literally lives in Sweden, the time difference can make it a little difficult sometimes.
As always, thank you for listening. We invite you to post some of your own fascinating folklore or delicious recipes for a treat in the comments. If you leave us a scary or a silly review wherever you listen to your podcast, it really helps us. Follow us on all socials. We are Cryptid Picnic Podcast on Instagram, Threads, and Facebook.
You can also follow me on my own Instagram at it's Ivy Boyd and TikTok at Ivy_Boyd. I promise it's a good time for even more spooky content. And join us next time for another installment of Cryptic Picnic, where we will bring you more stories of intrigue, discovery, and laughter.
Join us or else.
This podcast is researched, produced, and edited by both Ivy and Carla. Music is by Dimitri Terrace from Pixabay.